I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly biotechnology podcast that's not just about biotechnology. Providing information to help you change hearts and minds. Moving innovations to application with communication.
Welcome to the Talking Biotech Podcast, the weekly podcast where we discuss contemporary issues in science and technology, with a focus on biotechnology and new innovations that can help people and the planet. I'm Paul Vincelli, sitting in for Dr. Kevin Folta. Hey, Kevin, thanks again for the opportunity here. And today we're going to be talking about resistance genes to infectious diseases in plants and actually networks of resistance genes in plants. So this is a kind of a concept that I really wasn't aware of until I read the paper that we're going to focus on today, but we have with us today Chihang Wu and Lita Derevnina, both postdoctoral scientists in the laboratory of Dr. Sofian Kamun at the Sainsbury Laboratory in Norwich, United Kingdom. And so Chihang and Lita, welcome, and it's great to have you join us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And so, you know, one of the things that's nice about doing Talking Biotech podcast is I get to choose the topic. And so when I saw your paper, I said, oh yeah, this is something I want to learn more about. And so, you know, that's kind of the reason that I asked you guys is I thought what a wonderful topic, and I sure would like to know more about it. So let's start by saying that plant diseases, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with plant diseases, can cause losses of commonly 10 to 15% across regions of the globe in total crop production. So these are really serious issues. And you all, I guess we can properly describe you as plant pathologists who study resistance genes. Is that a fair, you know, description? Would you call yourselves plant pathologists?
Yes, I would call myself a plant pathologist because I did a bachelor degree and master degree in plant pathologies, in plant pathology department. So I would consider myself as a plant pathologist.
Absolutely. Good. And Lita, what about you? Is that your sort of disciplinary home or is it just one of your disciplinary homes?
So I actually did my undergraduate and PhD in plant pathology and plant breeding. So I would definitely consider myself a plant pathologist as well.
Wonderful. Great. Yeah. I must say that, resistance genes and host parasite biochemical interactions are really interesting topics, I think, to someone like me, an applied plant pathologist, and not easy to necessarily understand. So you both have an interest in a background in plant diseases. Tell our listeners a little bit about your sort of history as a scientist and as a plant pathologist.
So I did my bachelor degree in Taiwan in plant pathology and the microbiology department. And I started to get into these plant disease and kind of intrigued by those protocols we have in the university that the professor showed us a lot of plant disease and that we need to do those microscope, looking at those microorganisms. And then I decided to do a master in plant pathology. Mm-hmm. So I stayed in the same department and did my master degree studying oomycete. And then I moved to another place called Academia Sinica, which is a research institute, not focusing it focuses on plant biology, but my topic is also about plant pathology. So I studied plant virus when I was in Academia Sinica.
Plant viruses.
Plant viruses. Mm-hmm. And I came here to join Sofian's group to keep working on plant disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I did want to comment on the Sofian lab the Kamun lab. It's a very well-known research laboratory, of course. And also, I looked at the website, and there's some wonderful pictures of you all enjoying very delicious-looking food. So you chose well. So, Chihang, you actually got in plant pathology because of a teacher that used plant pathology examples.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Lita, what about you? How would you describe your history that leading up to becoming interested in this topic of host parasite interactions?
So I did my undergraduate degree I have a Bachelor of Science in Agriculture, and like every young person, I wanted to major in some sort of animal science, animal studies, because you know, you kind of want to work with cute little animals. But my plant teachers, the professors that taught plant science, were actually extremely engaging, and so I discovered that I was actually far more interested in what was going on in those lectures than I was in the animal lectures.
Yeah.
And so in my honors year, in undergraduate, I did a project on rust-resistant mm-hmm. genes.
Fungi that cause rust diseases, yeah.
That's right, in barley, in the plant barley. And that then took me on to, like, I stayed on there and I did a PhD also working on rust resistance in barley. Mm-hmm. And then I finished up there and decided that field work, because I had a plant pathology, plant breeding PhD, was quite difficult. It was very hot in the Australian summer, and doing crosses in the field was very difficult. So I wanted to do something different, and I moved to the University of California, Davis in the USA to do a postdoc in comparative genomics. And then after that, I really wanted to study more about host-microbe interactions, and that's what brought me to Sofian's lab.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I remember. So you were both were brought into the field of plant resistance genes through teachers, actually.
And
it's interesting the comment you made about the heat and working in applied systems. And I think applied scientists certainly appreciate and sometimes are awed by the work of the basic researchers who are our colleagues. And likewise, I remember a student who was a brilliant researcher, and he saw our square plots of fungicide spray in turf grass, and you could see the effect right to the square edge of the plot. And he said, "How did you confine the pesticide to the square?" And you know, it has to do, of course, somewhat with analysis and so on. But mostly, I said, "Well, we just come out here at 6:30 in the morning and spray before the wind starts." So something very simple like that, you know, was just mystifying to him. So it's nice when applied scientists appreciate basic scientists and vice versa.
Yes, definitely.
So let's provide our listeners with a little bit of scientific background on host plant resistance before we talk about the research itself that you guys summarized in a very nice review paper. Why don't you give some background to people who know nothing necessarily about plant disease resistance?
Yeah, so I think most people know that animal have immune systems, but plant have immune system too. So I think one of the interesting concept we know now is that plants are under attack of many different pathogens at the same time, mm-hmm. but they are resistant to most of these pathogens. Mm-hmm. So some of these pathogens can cause very severe disease and dramatically reduce the yield of crops. But that are actually example of one out of many microorganisms that exist in the environment. And this is because plants have a very robust and very complex immune system. And this immune system is mediated by immune receptors, or we call it as a resistant, disease resistance gene.
Okay, so these would be receptors being biochemical molecules that are involved in detecting the invading microorganism. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly.
So resistance involves a receptor to trigger what in the plant? What happens?
It would trigger a cell death response. So it would trigger some sort of dying tissue. So the plant then restricts the growth of the pathogen.
Okay, good. So it senses that there's an invading parasite, and the plant cell that is being invaded dies, and that leads to restriction of the invading parasite. Have I summarized it properly?
Yes.
What was the topic of your paper? And maybe we, with that background, we can talk about what you guys reported on and how it differs from, you know, the sort of the common understanding that we've had about plant resistance up till now.
Yeah, so I think the classical view of the plant disease resistance is what we called gene for gene theory or gene for gene hypothesis. So it was discovered by a scientist called Flo. He was looking at the resistance in rust, in flax against rust, and he realized that plants have this specific resistant gene, and then it provides resistance against certain pathogen that has a matching virulence gene. So now scientists discovered that these disease resistant genes are the immune receptor, and this gene for gene hypothesis is very useful for disease resistance breeding. But what we found recently, and also the discovery by other group, is that the plant immune system is very complex, and it's way more complex than gene for gene interaction.
You can kind of think of the plant immune system like an electrical circuit. It's very complex, and so it's not simple. It's not a straightforward thing, and there's a lot that we need to learn about it. Mm.
Yeah, that was very clear in the paper, and I thought that was a very good point. So back to the gene for gene hypothesis, and I really would like to stress for listeners the point that you've both made, and that is, the gene for gene hypothesis predicts that there will be a matching gene for a matching virulence gene. And therefore, if we have a susceptible plant, well, that hypothesis tells us we should be able to find a resistance gene out there that will match that that invading parasite. And so it gives us hope for breeding. So it actually has served. And it also does the flip, that is to say, if we have a resistance gene that we've put into our crop, well, we should expect that sooner or later a matching avirulence gene will occur in the parasite population, and therefore we're going to lose the resistance trait that we have. So first of all, have I said that accurately?
I think it's the opposite.
Oh, okay.
So if you have a resistant gene, yeah, and a matching avirulence gene in the pathogen, then you get resistance.
Yes.
So it'll be the opposite.
Of what I said.
Yeah, it's the opposite of what you said.
Sure, good. Well, that's why we have experts. I appreciate that. So, but either, in any case, the matching corresponding loss of an avirulence gene, right, is what's important. So in other words, we can predict if we've got a resistant plant that we're sooner or later the pathogen will adapt, or if we have a susceptible plant, it gives us hope that we can go out and find a...
Oh, yes, exactly. So the pathogen is actually evolving very fast. So for some of the genes that we consider as a resistant gene, it might lose the resistance activity against certain pathogen because the pathogen evolve really fast. They may have chance overcoming the resistance by losing the matching gene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's been in a way a useful concept, the gene for gene hypothesis, but it's not actually reflective of what you all have reported. So what was new about the paper you guys reported in Science? And by the way, the title of that is Receptor Networks Underpin Plant Immunity. And we will have a link to that at the website. But tell us about why the gene for gene model doesn't really fit what you actually observe in plants.
Yeah, so the concept that we discuss in this paper is that the plant immune system is very complex. It is made out of multiple layers. So you can think of like a rainbow cake. There are several different layers, and each layer is with different color.
So rainbow cake?
Yeah, like a cake that has different layers, and each layer is different color, which reflect that they have different function. Okay. So in terms of the immune system, one of layer is responsible for recognition. Okay. It can recognize the corresponding pathogen molecule. And then we have another layer, which is the receptor network there. And in this layer, we have the sensor receptor, which is responsible for sensing pathogen, and also the helper receptors, which are helping the sensor receptor for recognition pathogen. And then we have another layer, which is a signaling layer, which the signaling layer can also be very complex with different components participating at different processes.
Already, we're already into a level of complexity that wasn't reflected in the gene for gene model. So we've got pathogen molecules as a sort of a one layer, maybe the icing on the cake, right? Not so much for the plant's point of view, but it's a visual way to understand it. And then we've got a layer that of host molecules that recognize the presence of these of the icing, the pathogen molecules, and then below the host receptors. And I'm just repeating what you've got in your graphic, but in your paper. And so below the host receptor layer, you've got host co-receptors, and then below that we've got signaling. Biochemical signaling taking place. So we've got multiple layers here that all serve a different function in allowing the plant to defend itself biochemically. Correct?
That's right. That's correct. And even within the layers, there's a level of complexity because the receptor that senses the pathogen, so the sensors, they can work with a single helper. So the helper, I guess, could work with a single sensor, or it could work with multiple sensors. So even within the layers, you have multiple levels of complexity.
It's quite a complex reality is what you all describe in the paper. And so, you know, you've got these different layers and you've got arrows in your figure, and some people will certainly get the paper and look at it. Some of our listeners certainly will. And you've got these different layers, and then within the layers, you've got different components that have arrows going to different other components in other layers. And so it's really quite a network of complexity is what you describe.
That's right.
Yeah. So why is this better for the plant? I mean, why would plants evolve? Oh, and let me ask. I meant to ask this. And I'm assuming this model that you're describing of plant receptor networks is valid not only for, say, Arabidopsis, which is the equivalent of the fruit fly in terms of plant science. It's sort of a model system that allows us to do lots of research with a common model system, but I'm assuming this model of plant receptor networks applies to cultivated crops and other plants. Is that right?
Yes. So I think a lot of study were done in model system Arabidopsis.
Of course.
But in our lab, we use Nicotiana and tomato and potato as our experimental system, and we observe this complex network in tomato, in tobacco as well.
And then
of course this also applied to many other different crops.
So it's really a big step forward, I would say, by the publication of this paper. Once again, the title is Receptor Networks Underpin Plant Immunity. And I am curious, to know why plants do this?
Well, if you think about it, if you have a network, it really helps the plant maintain robustness of the immune system. So it's the immune system will be stronger, more stable. It will help the plant evade pathogen detection. And so if you can think about it in this way, we also had a video that came out with the perspective paper, and what you can think about is a plane. So a plane has two engines, and if one engine fails, possibly the pilot can still land the plane with one functional engine component. So that's what the immune network is like. If one component fails, then there's another component there to help keep the system working. And also, being a network, it's just more adaptable. You're really separating these different layers from each other, so that enables a much more efficient system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's redundancy, so that as you say, one engine fails in the plane, but often the pilot can land the airplane with the other engine still functioning. And also, I think your paper talks about efficiency, so you don't. I forget exactly how you described it, but you can have a molecule that plays several functions. Very good. Well, listen, let's take a short break. And when we're talking to Lita Derevnina and Chihang Wu from the laboratory of Sophie and Kamun in the Sainsbury Laboratory in Norwich, United Kingdom. And we're talking about host plant resistance and the complexity that the plant has evolved to defend itself against invading parasites. And we'll continue that discussion when we come back. Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast.
The goal of the Talking Biotech Podcast is to provide information about modern food and farming technologies with the hope of increasing their safe use in areas that help farmers, the environment, and the food insecure. It helps plug a gap that existed between scientists and the general public. And I've urged other people to participate in this discussion, but what's in it for you? Well, back in July, I attended the American Society of Plant Biology Conference in Montreal, and it was really great to meet so many people that really enjoy the podcast. And so to all of you students, postdocs, faculty, anybody else, here's an easy way to build your CV and develop your brand by simply participating and sharing the science. The Plant Cell is arguably the most prestigious plant science journal, but the papers are really dense and super important. We've begun an initiative called Plant Cell Extracts. Volunteer authors reinterpret the dense scientific reports in the form of short articles written for a lay audience, and we help edit. So think about writing for Plant Cell Extracts. Read the articles at medium.com/plantcellextracts and share them with people that would like to learn more about how to understand the nuts and bolts of modern plant science. New technologies that can benefit people and a planet.
And we're back on the Talking Biotech Podcast with Dr. Lita Derevnina and Dr. Chihang Wu from the laboratory of Sophie and Kamun in Norwich, United Kingdom. And we're talking about plant disease resistance and the networks of molecules that plants have evolved in order to defend themselves against these very hungry parasites that abound in nature. So thanks again for joining us today, you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, it's a pleasure. All right, so we're coming to the part that always matters most to an applied plant pathologist, and that is how this material that you've presented in your paper is very interesting, and that alone was the reason I read it. But there's always this question, of course, in the back of my mind as an applied plant pathologist: how does that help us in terms of the management, which is ultimately where we all, as plant pathologists, can justify the work that we do in one way or another? It ultimately is going to help us, hopefully, understand how to manage plant diseases better. So, how does this knowledge about receptor networks help with management now and in the future?
Yeah, so we talk about this idea, like several of this idea in the paper. And then one of the very interesting one is that since now we know these sensor receptors signal through the sense set of helper receptors. So by increasing the expression level of the helper receptor, we could potentially intensify the immune response. And since the network is complicated and it can provide resistance against many different pathogens. So by increasing the helper receptors, the amount of helper receptor, we could potentially increase the resistance against many different pathogens at the same time. So we can think of these helper receptors as a real estate that we can yank up it and then improve the immune response output.
Yeah. So let me clarify for myself and the listeners. So there's the host receptors, the receptor molecules that detect the presence of the parasite. But then a layer below that in the cake analogy that you described is the helper receptors. And we wouldn't necessarily have to change the host receptor molecules, the layer above, but the layer of helper receptors, maybe we could choose one or several helper receptors to upregulate. Yes. And because of these different arrows going to different signaling pathways, that by doing that, you might increase the resistance against several parasites and not just one parasite. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah, I read the paper, but I guess I didn't fully understand that aspect. So right there, we've got a potential opportunity. How would you use biotechnology or conventional breeding to do that? Which would be would either approach help us in increasing the activity of the helper receptors, or is biotechnology a more likely candidate for that kind of outcome?
I think we can use either technology because, I mean, all of these things, they're tools for us, right? They're different technologies that we can use. There's the traditional breeding approaches, as you mentioned. There's the generation of transgenics. We can do genome editing. We can look through wild germplasm. We can do mutagenesis. These are all tools and technologies that we have at our disposal. And the best thing that we can do is try to use these different tools in ways that will help us develop crops that are more resistant.
Ultimately, indeed, that's where we want to go. So one option is increasing the activity of co-receptors or helper receptors, knowing now that we do that they actually may contribute, each of them may contribute to defense pathways of different sorts, not just one. What other outcomes are relevant to disease management now or in the future?
So as you mentioned earlier, pathogens cause huge losses to crop production. And one of the things we do know is that pathogens, they're very fickle. They're continuously changing. They're very adaptive, and they can overcome these plant defenses. And one of the cool things about our knowledge of the network is that we know that pathogens, based on our work, can target the network at these different levels. So if we can understand how these pathogens are targeting these different layers, we can better understand what's occurring and work towards generating crops that are resistant based on our understanding of not only the pathogen, but also the host.
So the model gives us a framework for understanding how parasites may try to interfere, how parasites do interfere.
That's correct.
With the resistance network interactions that have taken place. And so, yeah, having that framework helps us then identify and perhaps pursue novel solutions for disease resistance.
That's correct.
Yeah. Anything? I mean, those are very good points, and certainly enough to justify the value of the model to applied plant pathology.
Well, the other thing that we know is that sometimes when you move resistant genes from one species to another, whether they're closely related or distantly related species, these genes don't function, and often you know, it's puzzling. Like, why does this gene not function in this particular host? And one of the things that is a possibility is that the helper protein is actually missing. It wasn't. It's not present in the receiving host.
Oh. So the receptors that you've moved the receptor, but you haven't moved the other components.
The co-receptor.
The co-receptor that would be necessary for functioning of the
receptor.
That's
correct.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes. So potentially what you could do is if you understand that there's a network, move the sensor and the helper protein, so the receptor, co-receptor, together as one unit into the new host plant.
Yeah. Wow, that's really good. Boy, this is really good. Oh, and you mentioned, Lita, that there is a video for the general public on the basics of this model, and I've seen it. It's very nice, and we will link to that at the website for the Talking Biotech podcast. So actually another question that occurs to me is, moving R genes or resistance genes or what we're talking about today, moving those among species that may not normally hybridize, like taking a gene from corn, why not? And moving it into tomato, right? Which you're never going to hybridize on their own. But we can do that with biotechnological tools. Does, on the one hand, that seems to open up all kinds of possibilities. If you can move resistance genes from, all the plants in the world to a crop, not at one time, of course, but it creates all these opportunities for engineering plant disease resistance. Maybe on the other hand, there's a downside. Is it even possible? Do you think? I mean, maybe I'm asking you to speculate, but does our knowledge of plant immunity networks open really many, many doors to genes, pools of genes for resistance that might not be available through conventional breeding? What do you think?
Well, I think it does open some opportunities, but it really depends on when we compare two different plants. We are comparing the immune system and then what is missing in the other one. Mm-hmm. So I think for some of the example, we could use this concept to like that we have the helper, we have the sensor receptor and the helper receptor. When we put them together, potentially for some of the cases, it can work, but it really depends on what are the components missing in this context. So for And if we know more, the more we know about the immune system, the chance of having successful transferring resistance or immune network will be higher.
Yeah, I think this is a really important point that you've added to the discussion that both of you have added. I want to credit you both, that this idea that understanding the full network components that are necessary for a receptor molecule to work, those probably have to be in place if we're going to move resistance genes from one plant species to another. So, Lita, would you say that most of the research that has led to this new understanding of networks of interacting molecules for plant disease resistance, how recently has that literature emerged in the scientific journal?
I think it's quite new. The original paper about resistant gene networks was published last year.
Oh.
Sihang was the first author on that paper. I think the concept itself is quite new.
Yeah, but there are also a lot of study working on a different set of immune systems. So the one that we are working on, the immune receptor in the cytoplasm, but there are also immune receptor at the cell surface. And the concept about the immune network of this cell surface immune receptor was discovered several years ago. So I think there are a lot of study about the immune network of the cell surface receptor, but in terms of the cytoplasmic immune receptor, it's very new.
Okay. And I see your paper is cited in your 2017 paper, is cited here in the current paper, and that was published in the Proceedings in the National Academy of Sciences.
Yes.
So this is really new stuff.
To get a greater understanding, really read the perspective and watch the video. And I think both of those will give people more understanding of what we're looking at right here.
Yeah. So go to the website, folks, and if you want to know more. So, hey, listen, Lita and Chi-Hung, thank you so much for joining us on the Talking Biotech podcast. It's been a pleasure to learn more about this topic.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting us for doing this podcast. It's very exciting for us.
Definitely.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, I love it too, so thanks. And thank you, listeners, for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Talking Biotech. Write a review on iTunes and tell a friend to listen, as your support allows us to deliver more about exciting science to more people. I'm Paul Vincelli, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. Send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review of this podcast on iTunes and recommend it to a friend. More downloads help us reach a wider audience with science.